in Shin Lamed Tes. Dine Gosis. Hagoses. Goses means someone who is really in the process of dying. Yosef. If someone is dying, they're not hooked up to any machines or anything, then what do they sound like?
They can make a death rattle.
What?
Like a death rattle?
Like if they're dying soon, the next few hours or something.
I haven't personally heard it, but they have, in the literature, there's a discussion like what they call it, a death rattle, which is like a different breathing pattern.
Right. Okay. So they have a, it's not clear. The word ghostis just means dying, but it seems that you identify a ghostis by many signs, including the funny kind of breathing. Nowadays, ghostis is a tricky one. The ghostis is someone who is about to die, right? There's a chazaka that he's going to die within maximum 3 days. Nowadays, a little tricky because more often than not, people die hooked up to all kinds of machines in the hospital, so they're not having any of the natural processes, and you can't necessarily tell when they're about to die by just listening to them, etc. But nonetheless, the halachas of ghostes would apply to lechora, to anyone who is, really the doctors say is in their last stages of life. Sometimes doctors can say, sometimes they can't. If, people would die in the natural way, then it would be fairly easy to tell, generally, the process of when they're dying. But a ghostes, so someone, whether in the hospital, hooked up to machines or not, who is close to death, harikachai l'chol devar. The ikker is, until they mamish die, they are considered like a living person for all purposes. And you don't do any of the things that you would do to a mace. And here, basically, it's a list of a lot of things you're supposed to do for covered a mace after the person dies. In kosher and l'chayav, you don't tie his jaw. Naturally, the after a person dies, a certain rigor mortis, or whatever they call it, sets in a process that causes some of his limbs to move, and his mouth would open, and that's disrespectful. So when someone dies, they used to tie their jaw. I don't know if they still do it the same way. So that their mouth won't open, it'll be more respectful, but you don't do that until their mom is dead. Ve'in sochen oso, and you don't smear them to preserve the smell and keep them clean. Ve'in matichon oso, you don't wash them. Ve'in poken es dekavav, you don't plug up the orifices, which they would do sometimes to keep cleanliness. Ve'in shomten rakar mitachtav, and you don't pull the pillow out from under him. Ve'in oso sol gabe chov, lo gabe chars, lo gabe adam, and you don't put him on sand or fine pottery shards or the earth, which are all things they used to do to keep him cool, to keep from spoiling before they had refrigerated morgues. And you wouldn't put on his belly not a bowl or some sort of big fork or a pitcher of water, or salt, which are all things they would do that would somehow perhaps help keep the body longer. So all those things you don't do for him because he's not dead yet. And you don't tell all the cities, send out messages to the cities that he's dead, and you don't hire people to play flutes and to sing wailing songs. Okay, nowadays you don't have flutes and wailing songs at funerals, but it's a number of posh in the Gemara. That was a very important thing in their days. And you don't close his eyes. That's also a respectful thing, to close the eyes when someone dies. Achitetze nafshel. All these things you don't do until the person actually dies. And anyone who does close the eyes together with the time of Yitzias HaNefesh, of death, is considered a murderer. And the Shach points out here, it means... literally, even at the time of death. Like, if your mom is at the time of death and closes his eyes, you're still a murderer, because you don't know exactly when he dies. And maybe first he just loses consciousness a little, or faints a little before, as they say, before he dies. And therefore, you should wait until you're sure the person is dead before you touch them. We see here also that just closing the eyes can kill a ghostase. The principle here is, the Nosekin will explain, in the Shachs of Katan Dalid, and the and the other Nosei Kalim, that A ghost ace is in a very delicate situation, even though someone in this room, if I were to, it would be annoying to you if I started opening and closing your eyes and your jaw and all these other things, but it wouldn't be dangerous at all. When someone is about to die, the muscle they have is like a lamp, an oil lamp that's flickering, the Hanukkah candle is about to go out, flickering its last light. If you touch it and you move it just a tiny tenth of a millimeter, just give it a little push, it will go out. And likewise, the ghost says, perhaps you might cause him to die a second prematurely by touching him or moving him in any way, and therefore you don't mess with the ghost ace at all, because that could be considered a shvichos damen. That is a very fundamental principle. Now, of course, so some of the things we just said you don't do because they could be killing him. Meaning, not just the ma'amitz einav. All the things that involve any physical movement of the goseis could be chash of murder, which is very chumer. Some of these other things are obviously not a chash of murder, like to hire flute players and whalers and to send messengers to other cities is obviously not going to hurt this fellow, but we see that it is still usser. So those things which involve physical movement are for sure usser, because they might actually constitute shvichos damim. Even those things are just acting like he's dead, like hiring the chalila and mekonanos, etc. Even those things are usher, because this would obviously only be an isser to Rabbanan, because you're not supposed to treat him like he's dead as long as he is alive. The ein korin v'lo choltsim v'lo speed in olav. These are other things which are not going to affect the goseis in any way. They're only on you, but you're not allowed to treat him as dead. So you don't do kriya, or in the old days they used to do choltsim, which was take their shirt off their shoulder, bare their shoulder was a sign of mourning. V'lo maspid in olav, or eulogize, v'lo machnisim or labayis, or bring a coffin into the house with him. Ad she yamos, until he is dead. Being postal of tzidik adin, ashen tzin afsho, and likewise, you don't say the tzidik adin until he is dead. Now, there's one thing which is controversial. Says the Ramah, v'yesh omrim v'in chotzvin lo, kever afish eno mevayis ad achar shiyamos. Right? There's a yesh omrim, that's a rivash, that you don't dig a grave. It says you don't bring the aron, the coffin, into his house. Obviously, the grave you can't bring into his house. The grave is stuck in the cemetery. So, how about digging a grave? So, you don't dig a grave, according to the Rivash, until he is dead. Why? Because the, excuse me. The Rivash assumes that even digging a grave is considered to be treating him like he is dead. And you're not allowed to treat him like he's dead, even if you're just mentally until he passes away. However, this is controversial. The Shach quotes the Bach, who paskins like the Beis Yosef, against the Rivash, who says that no, there's no isser in just digging a grave. Digging a grave is something that's not treating him as dead, that's just preparing for his death. You're allowed to prepare for his death, just not treat him as dead. And the assumption is, the assumption is that hiring Chalilin and Mekonanos was something you only did after someone died, and therefore you can't treat him as dead. However, digging a grave is something reasonable to do before the fellow dies, and therefore is mutter. Okay, so here we have a borderline case. How about doing something which is preparing for death? You know, is this considered preparing for death or treating him as dead? So the Rivash says treating him as dead and usher. The Beis Yosef and the Bachs have cut in vav. Quoting the Shach says, it is mutter because you're just preparing for his death. Now, of course, there's only b'tznai that he doesn't know about it. Because if he knows about it, it could ruin his psychological equilibrium and cause him to die sooner. So the Machlokas is only if it's not in the cemetery. He can't hear, he can't know, and you won't tell him. So, is that considered disrespectful to his life or not? Is it machlokas Rivash and Beis Yosef? And the Ramah is machlokas like Rivash, the Shach and the Bach are making like the Beis Yosef, theoretically. However, this is somewhat theoretical. The Pesach Tshuva also quotes the Mishnah Melech is Mekel. However, this is somewhat theoretical because the Ramah continues, V'asr lachzov shum kahaver lios pasuach ad l'machar shalo yikru lo ameis v'osor yom yishtakana b'davar. That he says it's never a good idea for a different reason. Here we're talking about halacha. Halachas of, you know, kvod achai. that you shouldn't treat a live person as dead, so this is a borderline case, digging a grave, and there are machmirim, there are mekilim. However, and lemaisa, the mekilim seem to have the majority view here. However, there's another problem. This is al-pisod, that we have from Yehuda Chassid, a masorah of a lot of things al-pisod that we don't understand, or at least I don't understand. Yehuda Chassid says that if you dig a grave and don't bury someone on that day and leave it to the next day, it is dangerous. Within 16 days, someone who is involved in that digging will die. So you don't want to mess with that from Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. Rabbi Yehuda Chassid said, within 16 days you'll die. Okay, some of us might be moralistically inclined, some more rationally inclined, but you know, you don't want to take your chances with something like that. And therefore, we are machmir not to dig a grave if it might stay open overnight. And therefore, lemaisa, we would never dig a grave before someone died, because, like, we never dig graves in advance because of the sakana of leaving it open overnight, not necessarily because of the halacha of the Ramah, but because of the sakana, the only exception. The Shach says, in this rare case, let's say someone's about to die on Friday afternoon, and you want to dig the grave so you can bury them before Shabbos. He says, it's okay as long as you give yourself enough time to put the dirt back in the grave if he doesn't die, and avoid this sakana. Okay, so halacha l'maisa, we are choshish for this sakana, even though al-pi halacha, most poskim are mekel against the Ramah. Before we get into the other halacha l'maisa things, I'll just point out one ha'ara from the shach in the first sifkatan here, which is sort of obvious for the Lashon and the Mechaber, but I wanted to point it out, that when we say a ghost is considered like as if he's living for all purposes, that means literally for all purposes. Says the Pesachei Tshuva, we're Mechal Shabbos to extend his life. If we're afraid he might die now, but we could do Melacha and he'll live another few hours or a few minutes, then we're Mechal Shabbos. He's like a real life person. And the Shach says, for all of Kosher Mishpat and Nebuchadnezzar, he's like a live person. He's a real legal person. He could do Kinyanim, he could do Gerushin, he could do etc. And therefore, you know, we treat him with all the privileges of a live person and until he mamish expires. The end of the Ramah is the big issue in medical halacha nowadays. Let's read the end of this Ramah. V'chein asur ligrul lemeisha yamas mehera. It is asur, I mean, this is sort of obvious what we said beforehand. It is asur to cause a mace to die faster. Well, that's obvious. That's murder. Even though he's dying anyway, Mishu goseis zman orach lo yuchali parid. Someone who's goseis for a long time and his soul can't separate from his body. Asur li shamed a karva kes mitachtav. You're not allowed to pull out the pillow from under him. Mikoach sheomrim sheish notzos mitzas ofo shegormin zeh. Here we're not talking about LP science that we recognize. We're talking about LP some science or mysticism that we don't fully understand, but people say that there was some kind of bird feathers. All their pillows used to have feathers inside. So there are some kind of bird feathers that keep the soul from leaving the body. And therefore, what if he's on a pillow and we think that pillow might have the feathers that keep the soul from leaving the body? Okay, it's not important now, you know, whether, you know, we can actually identify any bird feathers that keep the soul from leaving the body if the person lies on them, because the principle that's important. You can't pull out the pillow from under him to remove his feathers and let him die. V'chein lo yizdenim m'komo. Likewise, you cannot move him. V'chein also losim of teichos beis hakneset tachas rosho kdei shipari. And likewise, you can't put the keys to the shul under his head in order that his soul leave the body. This is also not scientific, more mystical. Okay, if you put the keys to the shul under his head, then his soul will be able to leave the body if it's somehow stuck. You can't put the keys to the shul under his head. And here's where it gets tricky. You can't do something to make him die, but if there's something keeping him alive, you could take it away. So if there's a loud noise which is keeping him from his loud noises keep many of us from our rest, so it's keeping him from his final rest. You can tell the guy to stop banging and stop the loud noise and let him die. And likewise, if there's salt on his tongue that keeps him from dying, you can take the salt off the tongue. Here, it's a little tricky because the Taz says, what do you mean take the salt off the tongue? That's moving his tongue. If you move even his eyelid, then you could kill him. Moving his tongue could also kill him. You forget the salt. How about the tongue? So the Nikudas, I guess, it defends the Raman, says, No, we mean that taking salt off the tongue is much smaller action than closing eyelids. it hardly moves him at all, and therefore an action that hardly moves him at all is not considered an action that would kill a gosase. It's just removing the salt, and removing the salt is just what's called hasaras monea. So here it gets very, very, very tricky, and Apfel agreed to give us a shiur when he gets back for the next zman as to exactly how to deal with these things. I'll just mention three issues that come up halacha lemaisa. Well, first, let me just mention two more things from the Nosei Kelim. Number one, removing the feathers. What's the difference between removing the feathers and removing the salt? If removing the salt is considered hasaras monea, I'm not killing him. I'm just taking away the salt that keeps him alive. So why is removing the feathers hasar? I'm just taking away the feathers that interfere with his death. It's just hasaras monea. So both the Shach and the Tazir say, Taka, removing the feathers is not a problem. Removing the feathers is heter gomer, theoretically, just like removing the salt. The problem is not removing the feathers. The problem is that since the feathers are in the pillow, he's lying on the pillow, when you pull out the pillow, that moves his body a lot. That's a significant trauma to the body, right? Even, right, if you were lying on a pillow, I pulled out the pillow, that would be a zetz. And therefore, the problem isn't taking away the feathers. Taking away the feathers are sars monea. The problem is that, coincidentally, in order to remove the feathers, you also have to cause him to fall on the floor off the pillow. Or even if you gently pull out the pillow, you're still moving him 5 inches lower. And the moving him might kill him. Okay, so here we see examples of moving him is causing him to die. However, taking away salt or noise or feathers, let's say you could take away the feathers without moving him. I don't know how the feathers work. Let's say the feathers on top of him would also keep him from dying. I don't know how long the feathers. And you would take those feathers off the top of him and you wouldn't move him. That would be okay. So the three big issues nowadays, I'm not going to start from that point I ended, but, and, you know, we'll learn more about this, is, so I'm not going to go into the shitas. Number one, what's called hasaras monea, and what's called killing? Right, here it gets a little tricky with the goal of pulling the plug. Is pulling the plug killing, or is pulling the plug hasaras monea, right? What we mean by pulling the plug is there's a machine that keeps him breathing or etc., right? And you unplug it, right? And you unplug it. So this is a big machlokes in the poskim that Sitz Eliezer says that's hasaras monea. You're taking away a machine that interferes and keeps him alive unnaturally. Taking away the machine is hasaras monea. Some people quote Rosh Hashanah like that. Most poskim say not that way. I think that the mainstream psak is not the way they assume. No. Turning off the machine, that's not hasaras monea. Hasaras monea is taking away some like weird thing that interferes. Turning something off that's already making his body work, that is considered to be killing him. And it's very hard to make a career in these things. Like in all halachas of grama and maisa, you go into Makot Soma and Shabbos and all these other things, it's very hard to make a career. Here, it's just intellectually hard to make a career and just much more chomer. Because you're dealing with questions of Shichas Damin. So this is very controversial. Whether turning off machines that keep him alive is Hasaras Monea or is killing. And the other issue is, and this is discussed by the Poskim, a bit of a chiddush of the Poskim is you don't have to, you can stop doing things that like keep him alive. What kind of things can you stop doing? You can stop doing things that artificially keep him alive, or you can start doing things that are just normal things that everyone does to keep him alive. You know, like, for example, if you were lying in a bed and you couldn't move, if I didn't feed you, you would die. So is like not feeding you just hasaras monea? I'm taking away the food that keeps you artificially alive, or no? That's not hasaras monea. I'm taking salt or weird things, etc. Taking away your food is killing you because everyone needs food. So this is a big, big debate in the poskim as well. Do you have to give him? You don't have to give him all kinds of really fancy medical procedures. Then you could say hasaras monea. I don't have to do all kinds of fancy medical procedures to keep him alive. He's dying right now anyway. But what do you have to give him? Do you have to give him food? And by food, usually we're not talking about the guy's eating. Obviously, if the guy can eat, you give him food. He's not about to die. We're talking about feeding tubes. What about what about oxygen? What about antibiotics and medicines, and, you know, is there a difference between medicines that treat this, you know, life-threatening illness versus, like, routine medicines that healthy people also take? So all of these are the big questions, the two big questions of Hasaras, of, what's the, Grumas Misa. Misa versus Hasaras Monea, the two big types of questions are, number one is turning off a machine, is that causing or removing the cause? Right?
That machine that we're describing, it's not a machine that's giving him oxygen or giving him...
No, the breathing tube is not the machine that's giving him oxygen. Oxygen is, like in the airplanes, like the thing that goes like this.
Right.
That's for people who can breathe, they just need extra oxygen because they're not so good at it. For people who are, you know... I mean, who might be very sick, but can breathe. This machine is, I mean, the...
One's making his lungs go in and out, and the other one is giving him oxygen for blood.
Right, just giving oxygen. Some people say, well, everyone needs oxygen. I mean, it's a little tricky. And number two, what about withholding standard needs of a person? And of course, what standard needs of a person? Is standard needs of a person that someone needs to be fed through a tube? Or is that considered, no, that's some weird thing to do to interfere with nature? It's very tricky. What's interfering with nature? What's nature? Do you define it by, you know, shashish mibarishis? Do you define it by what's normal nowadays? Do you define it by what's parallel to what? So all these things, withholding standard needs of a person, is that causing? Or removing an eco. And some of the examples are, right, feeding tube, oxygen, antibiotics, etc. It would seem that not curing some terrible thing with special medicines, that would be considered Hasaras Monea, and perhaps that would be mutter if, again, not much to kill people, just stop to want to get rid of them. But let's say the case like this. They're really dying, and there's no hope, and they're not going to be able to get anywhere, and we're just prolonging their suffering. So if you're just prolonging their suffering, like in this case, chas v'shalom, no one says you can do anything to even hasaras moneah to cause someone to die just because they're expensive to keep alive. The question is, if a person is really, they're dying, and it's just prolonging their suffering. So on the one hand, you don't want to prolong their suffering. On the other hand, you don't want to kill people. These are some of the big issues that come up that are very, very difficult in halacha nowadays. Yosef, feel free to supplement. These are very, very tricky issues because, A, you don't want to prolong someone's suffering, and B, the culture out there in the hospitals nowadays is that they really want to get rid of people who are about to die or who... they could conveniently call them about to die, even if they're not really, etc. And you have to be very careful because our beliefs are very much against the system in America nowadays. Eretz Yisrael, not so much. So sometimes you have to be strong about these things, but you have to know, you know, what's really right halachically, what's wrong halachically. The other big issue, of course, is who's a goseis, not who's a goseis versus who's healthy. Because, you know, usually we can tell who's a ghost who's healthy. The other big question is ghostes versus mix. Who's a ghostes and who's dead? In the old days, it was very simple who's a ghostes, who's dead. Right? You, if the person's breathing and their heart's beating, which always had to go together, because you can't breathe without your heart beating, your heart can't beat without breathing, right? If the person's alive, they're alive. And if they're stone cold, they're not doing nothing, their body does anything, then they are dead. Nowadays, it's much more complicated because we have, what do they call the heart-lung machines?
ECMO?
What?
ECMO?
What is that?
Like the heart-lung machines.
The heart-lung machines, right? Basically, someone could have been dead 100 years ago, but now there's a machine that makes them breathe and pumps their blood and can keep them alive for a very, very long time. So are they alive or are they dead? This is what's known as the famous brain death controversy. Brain death controversy. There is a sort of das yachid out there that some people say that maybe Rav Shlomo Zalman held, although it's a shita by a Rav named Arya di Medina, who's quoted in the Im Yaakov in Yoma, on the Sugya Daf Behei, a person who's dying, who says, if their brain doesn't function, then they're dead. That is not mainstream halacha. Mainstream halacha, we say, although it's going to be tricky here, conceptually, mainstream halacha is that being alive or dead doesn't depend if your brain works. It depends if the simple shot, what does it depend on? Does death depend on brain that is siyachid or breathing? That's the pashut shot. That is the mainstream shot. Why? Because the Chumash says, kol asher nishmas ruach hayim ba'apav, right? Life is nishima in your nose, which is where you breathe, right? Or your mouth, same thing. And even the word nishama is nishima, right? Your nishama is in there if you have nishima. And that's what the Gemara in Yoma says. You should check if the guy's breathing, right? Check his nose. If he's breathing, then he's alive. If not, not. This is the mainstream opinion. And here we have, Blythe quotes many achronim, breathing and heartbeat. This is many achronim, Chacham Tzvi and others, which really is not much of an afkamina, because can you breathe without your heart beating? Can your heart beat without breathing?
You mean artificially?
Artificially?
I mean, you could have a heart beating without lungs, and then you could pump someone's body, someone's blood without a heart.
You could pump someone's blood without a heart, right. But can you breathe without pumping the blood?
Could you?
I mean, it wouldn't be significant.
Like in theory, right. I mean, you could just push in air and out. There won't be any. If the blood's not moving, then they're not going to oxygenate their body. Uh-huh. But you could.
I guess okay.
You
so
could
the mindset
and contract.
The mindset. I think normally, like if a machine has someone breathing, it has their heart beating.
Right.
If it has their heart beating, they're breathing. Like, you don't really have, I don't think it's a common case where someone's heart would be beating without them breathing, because then the heart wouldn't be doing anything. Or if someone's breathing without their heart beating, then it wouldn't be doing anything. I'm not talking about an artificial heart. So pashtus is, we care about, this is more or less the same. So halakha l'maisa, you could say someone's dead if they're not breathing anymore. The big debate nowadays is, what's the big debate nowadays? The big debate nowadays is, what does not breathing mean? Right? What does not breathing mean? After all, I think we would all agree that if you took a cadaver from the morgue and started pumping air in and out of its lungs, it's still dead. So here it gets very tricky, and there are many things that make it trickier. I'm not really getting into the sugya, just pointing out. The big issue is not how to define death. Because we paskin, death doesn't depend on the brain, it depends on breathing, or breathing and heart beating, which are more or less the same thing, practically. So the big debate is, what does breathing mean? Does it mean breathing even via a machine? Or does it mean davka breathing independently? And of course, breathing independently means based on the brain. So, here's where the brain comes in. It's not that we really take seriously the shita that being dead depends on whether your brain works. Being dead depends on breathing. What's called breathing? Breathing is if something makes your lungs breathe or if you make your lung breathe, right? Are you breathing if a machine pumps air into your lungs? That's a question that doesn't have a clear answer, LP grammar, and even if it did, that would be irrelevant, right? Depends how you look at it, right? So, breathing independently means you have brainstem function, right? Because you can't breathe if your brain doesn't send messages to your lungs to tell them to breathe. And the brain has to send these messages. So this is the big, big debate. This is the question called brain death. Nowadays in the secular world, it's accepted that there's something called brain death. If your brain is dead, you're dead. And that means even the brainstem, meaning, let's say someone's brainstem works. They can still regulate their body temperature and breathe and things like that, but they can't think anymore because most of their brain is dead. Then the secular world would consider them dead. They're still alive. They're alive, they're just not capable of thought. But when the entire brain is dead, even the parts that just make you breathe, which are the most rudimentary parts, then the secular world considers you dead. What does the halacha say? So if you say breathing even by a machine is breathing, then you are... al pi halacha. If you say no, it's only called breathing if you are breathing, not if something is pumping you, then you are a mace al pi halacha. And this is the big question, does halacha accept brain death or not? One of the biggest debates nowadays, does halacha accept brain death or not? And this is a very controversial. You know, I am not going to paskin this now. Rav Moshe Feinstein is understood in different ways. I don't want to get into this. It seems the simple shot in his words, although I don't know if this is wait, this is the way Rav Tendler explained it. It seems to be the simple shot in his words, but it's hard to tell because he writes different things and you have to put them all together. Is that brain death counts? This is maybe the Igros Moshe. This is the accepted psak of the hospitals in Israel, meaning not that there's not room for people to have different practices there, but the Rabbanu Harashit paskin this way in Israel, and that became the halachic policy of the state, and obviously like everything else, every individual has their own halachic policy. You know, it's not mekubal to necessarily follow the state, but this is the Rabbanu Harashit. Rav Shlomo Zalman's opinion is greatly debated. There are those who quote him as saying he holds from brain death theoretically, but he doesn't trust them to test for it properly. And therefore, Lemaisa, he doesn't want to be Mekel. Okay, many poskim, including most of the Rosh Yeshiva of our yeshiva, not Rav Tendler, like the very oldest generation Rosh Yeshiva, but Rav Schechter and Rav Bleich and Rav Willig and etc. Including many the Rosh Yeshivas from Yitzchak Hanan, do not hold from brain death, and hold that if you're breathing by a machine, you're still breathing. Okay, this nafkamina is a big shaila nowadays. There are two nafkaminas. One nafkamina is just, let's say the tests show a person is brain dead, can they just pull the plug and bury him? So that depends on this machlokas. That is a somewhat of an nafkamina, but Yosef, how long can a person continue brain dead? Not terribly long, right? So it's not as if, the guy's going to live for another 3 years, if he's hooked to the machine brain dead. Once a person's still brain dead, even with all the machines, he's not going to last more than a couple of days or however long. So one nafkamina is just, when is he dead? Is he dead Monday or is he dead Thursday? Which obviously is somewhat of a nafkamina, but it's not the end of the world. It's not such a big nafkamina because, Lemaisa, he's going to be dead pretty soon. It's not a question of lingering on for years. Once you're brain dead, if you're actually brain dead, you can't. No one can be brain dead for a year. It's just like the body just decomposes, falls apart. The big nafkamina is for transplants. Because if someone wants to transplant, I'm not talking about things like kidneys that you can transplant from a I think you can transplant a kidney from a cadaver, etc. Let's say hearts and lung transplants can only be taken from a person whose hearts and lungs are still working. If you wait for their body to fall apart, then you can't transplant anymore. So let's say there's people dying because they need a heart or lung transplant. The only way to get a heart and lung transplant is from someone whose heart and lungs are still pumping, but obviously you can't take from a live person because you only have one, you don't have enough to spare. So it has to be from a dead person whose heart and lungs are still pumping. The only case of that is a brain dead person. Because how else do you have a dead person hooked up to a machine? Otherwise, there's no such thing as a dead person who has healthy hearts and lungs. So this is one of the reasons why it's such a big, because it's not just about focus. Do you pull the plug Monday or Wednesday? Which is a nafkamina of 2 days, I don't know, but it's not the end of the world. The nafkamina is, let's say, there's many people who are dying because they need hearts and lungs. So if you say you don't hold from brain death, then you can't save those people because you can't take hearts and lungs from anyone because whoever's alive, whoever's hearts and lungs are working by definition is alive, and whoever's dead by definition, their hearts and lungs don't work. If you hold from brain death, then you can save those people, and that's why it is a very big nafkamina in modern medicine. Okay, so I'm not going to agree with that now. Even though you would think from common sense that your common sense would probably tell you that if the person doesn't really have anything in their body that could possibly cause them to breathe on their own, then that's just artificially inflaming a corpse, and they're dead. however, you know, most of our Rosh Yeshiva think otherwise. Okay, my Rebbe of Lichtenstein had, the, whenever people ask this question, which they did often, if Chas V'Shalom, you have a situation where someone is, you know, obviously we're not talking about someone who's 90 years old and sick and dies in the hospital because they're not going to transplant anything from him anyway. Like, it wouldn't last that long anyway. When Chas V'Shalom, you have a situation where someone is young and is killed tragically, but not on the spot, is brought to the hospital, and then they can't save him, and then he becomes brain dead. So should you donate his organs, which are according to the second opinion here, or should you not? You have to wait for his body to collapse, and I mean collapse on the outside, collapse on the inside, and stop working and not donate his organs? Is a, you know, there's sort of pikuach nefesh on both sides of that question. It's a big question. My Rebbe of Lichtenstein was always nohag to tell the family that they should make whatever decision they're comfortable with, and he wasn't going to tell them which way to go, which meant generally they decided to donate the organs in many masim shahayu that I've seen. Okay, but this is a big machlokas, and maybe we'll hear more about that in the future. These are just some of the medical issues that tie into this seif.
I've always heard that
Rav Shechter was machmir on both sides, but being machmir on both sides practically means not holding from brain death. You're right, I misspoke. He paskined, it's a 50-50 suffix, but practically that comes out the same. So thank you for that. Thank you for that correction. I mean, practically it's the same, but you're right. It's important to know the conceptual basis of the shita.
But also, if you hold that, it could be the other side.
It could be the other side, but if you hold it as a suffix, then practically you're not holding for brain death, because misafik, you can't donate the organs or pull the plug or anything. So practically, you're treating him as alive, misafik.
But in some things like Yerusha,
okay, so that's interesting. If you hold it as a suffik, then you can have spankos about the non-medical areas of halacha, about Yerusha and about Yibum and about all kinds of other things. So that's a good point. That is a very good point. Rav Shechter holds a suffik, and thank you, I stand corrected. Even though in terms of the hospital shilas, holding to suffix means not holding from brain death, in terms of other things, you know, it could have a big nafkamina if you have a weird timing of Yerusha or I guess Yerusha is probably the main nafkamina, and I'm sure we could think of other nafkaminas as well, then it could potentially make a difference. If you have weird timing in terms of imamunus or even like weird yibum cases or something like that, then it could make a nafkamina.
What's the spar of telling them to do which everyone they're more comfortable with?
That's a fascinating svara. I never asked Rav Lichtenstein that. My understanding of the svara is that he felt that you could be soulmate on the position of the Lechora Rav Moshe and the Rabbi Natarisha. I forget who were the Rabbi Natarisha when they issued that psak. It might have been Yom Rav Shapira, but I'm not sure. It was definitely in the Tekufa when the Rabbi Natarisha were Gedolei Olam. My understanding is that he felt that you could be soulmate on it, but he didn't want to paskin it as a psak halacha, rather that one could be somech on it. I'm not sure. I'll see if I can find out a little more. Okay. Yes.
The first discussion in terms of Pasaris and Manea and actually causing Misa, is that also affected by this, like where the Gosis is, and meaning even if you don't hold that brain death is death.
Might you be able to say, well, maybe he's dead, and even if he's not dead, maybe I'm not actually causing the death, but merely doing a Saras Monea. Certainly one could come out with a psak like this. You know, I don't know Lemaisa if a lot of people put those together, but you're right, that would obviously be logical. Okay, so we'll bling netter, we will come back to this, and let's go on now in some of the halachos that have more to do with Avelos. Beis. Beis is very controversial, although, you know, having nothing to do with what we've been discussing until now. The Gemara says it's a rove, a strong rove, that a goseis can't survive more than 72 hours. They're dying. Maybe miraculously they can stretch out 3 days, which even so is highly unlikely. But after 3 days, you're sure they're dead. Therefore, someone tells you, unfortunately, your relative, I went on a 3 days journey when I left to his ghost face. You can be certain that he died. And you can sit Shiva. Here it gets very controversial because of something that we'll learn later on in Siman, I think, Shinai and Hay, which is that it's based on a rov. We don't allow the widow to remarry based on a rov. And therefore, it gets very tricky because if someone's a ghost face 3 days ago, who knows? Perhaps it was like a mistaken diagnosis and they recovered. After all, someone might look like they're about to die with all the signs and you never know what it could be. Right? Doctors can tell you, not necessarily about ghost sayings. They're all people who might look dead in various ways, and there's weird explanations. Right? The right kind of drug overdose could probably make people look dead in all kinds of strange ways. Right, Yosef?
Romeo and Juliet.
Okay. And, you know, being frozen underwater being frozen underwater can make people look dead in strange ways. There's all kinds of things that can make people look dead in strange ways. Therefore, it's only a rogue.
You can't pronounce someone dead if they were hypothermic.
Exactly. Right. So, and you never know what kind of weird things there are, especially since here, we're just talking about they sound like a ghost face. We're not talking about sophisticated medical tests. So it could be, who knows why they sounded that way. But maybe the taka recovered a little, and therefore we would not let the widow remarry, because a woman can't do a shash of ashes ish of adultery if she remarries, based on a rove. So here it becomes very tricky. That's a principle later on in some Shinai and Hay. Becomes very tricky. So why is there a velus if we don't let her remarry? Because the principle seems to be that we don't do a velus if the widow is able to remarry, because that would be contradictory. So here we have a whole range of opinions. Again, this is not a lemaisa shaila for us nowadays. Why? You never know. Because usually if someone says they saw your relative Gosase 3 days ago in some other town, you could pick up the telephone and find out what happened to them. Right, we have modern communications. So usually, you know, it would be a very strange case that you wouldn't, you'd have this information and not know. But what would happen in a strange case? So the two, the Shmuel says, here we have Avelus and you have Heter Ishto. The Beis Shmuel says in Eben Ha'ezer that Miss Ablim and she's Muteres Lehinase. No, Taka, this is such a strong role of the Gosase, she can remarry after 3 days. That is a big chiddush. Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes to the Mahar Chash. The opposite. That she's not allowed to remarry, and Amos Ablin. And he disagrees with the psak of the Shulchan Aruch here. He says the Shulchan Aruch here is wrong. It's a little funny, because then the Shulchan Aruch will contradict himself. But that's how he paskins. Then there's a whole bunch of achronim who tried to find answers. Maybe I'll just mention one or two of the answers. I'll just mention two answers, the Noda Behuda and the Beis Meir, and each of them have other people with them. Says the Noda Behuda that this is a case, Miss Ablin and the Okimta, is that he's a ravak, he's single. Yeah, the machaber here means if he's single. If he doesn't have a wife, then you're mesabel. And she's asura. V'ein misablin, if he is nasoi. Says, no problem. If he's married, you don't do avelus. He just meant here, you do avelus if he's single. Because if he's single, then there's no problem of inconsistency. And the Beis Meir says, and these are all found in Piskei Tshuva here in the Piskei Tshuva and Eben Ezer. He says, nope, Taka, Miss Ablin, and yet she is Asura to remarry. It is a contradiction. So he says, let's say a little better. Miss Ablin, but he makes an Okimta. What is the Okimta? The Okimta is that Makom Karov, it's just a few days' journey. And here she would be a sure to remarry, and there would be no avelos in the Okimta. Maybe she's right, all Okimta. Of Makom Rachok. He says very posh. If the guy comes and says, I saw your relative Gosase 6 months ago, very far away, before modern communication, then she wouldn't be allowed to remarry. And you wouldn't do a velus to be consistent.
But here we're talking about a case where it's only 3 days' journey. He says, I saw 3 days ago, not 3 months ago. If it's only a 3 days' journey, we could do a velos. What if she remarries based on a rove? She won't remarry based on a rove. With a 3 days' journey, she'll for sure get updates within the next few days. She's not getting married tomorrow. She has to wait 3 months to get remarried anyway. Okay, eventually she'll get clear information in the next few days, because if you're close by, then we don't have to worry that she might remarry illegally, because she'll get an update. Okay, these are some of the opinions in the Achronim, as to how to be miyashiv simin shin lamates with simin shinayin hay. Again, shin lamates says you're misabel based on rove. Shinayin hay says you're not misabel based on rove, because you can't permit the woman to remarry based on rove. So either this is such a strong rove you permit her to remarry, or the mechaber is wrong, this is such a weak rove you're not misabel, or this is talking about a single guy, and that's talking about a married guy. Or here's talking about someplace close where you can be Miss Abel, and not worry that she'll remarry illegally because she's so close she'll hear. And that's something in a faraway place.
Is this dependent on like a theory as to why we have these two bound together? Why we're not allowed to have this theory? Is it because like fundamentally we can't have like this tartar sorcery, or is it because we're just afraid of what she's going to end up doing?
Right, the simple chat is just that we're afraid, but that could work for all of them. Okay, Gimel. Omrim Tzidik HaDin Im Yitzias Neshama. We say Tzidik HaDin at the time the person dies. Ushmegila Dain HaEmes Kori HaAvel. And when he gets to Dain HaEmes, Tzidik HaDin is a tefillah that's in, we'll see, it's in the liturgy that we say at a funeral. So the people who are there, who at the time he dies, at least the relatives will see, or at the time he dies, say Tzidik HaDin then. When they get to Baruch Hashem L'Kinim HaFam Dain HaEmes, they tear Kriya, as is our minhag, that the minhag is tear Kriya at the time of the bracha of Dayan HaEmes. This is the Ikar HaDin, that you tear Kriya when Lo Aleinu, the relative, dies. Nowadays, the minhag is that they do not tear Kriya when the relative dies. They tear Kriya at the funeral. We've all been to funerals. We've seen the Avelim tear Kriya before the funeral, right? The minhag Ashkenaz is that the Avelim tear Kriya right before you start the funeral. Why is that? So the Gesher Chaim, the Achronim say, because a lot of people don't know Hilchos Kriya properly, and they'll do it wrong, and therefore we do the Tzidik HaDin and the Dayan HaEmes and the Kriya at the funeral, because at the funeral the rabbi's there who's officiating, and he'll make sure everyone does everything properly, and if you just leave it to relatives, and not just relatives, meaning very distraught relatives who are, not themselves, then they'll do it wrong, and therefore it's not worth it. Says the Gesher Chaim, someone who wants to really Lo Aleinu, be mahader, and knows the halachas of Kriya, and to do what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, then that's even better. However, the mainstream minhag is that someone wants to follow the normal practice. The normal practice is to not fulfill this mechaber and push it off till later, because it's better to have a rabbi's supervision to make sure you do it right. But again, you don't have to keep the minhag. The Gesher Chaim writes that if you know the halachos, then it would be it would certainly be proper to keep the Shulchan Aruch.
And what would you recommend for rabbis to do? Like, we'll learn these halachos, but like, what does it look like if the rabbi starts to keep different halachos that he tells his constituents to do?
Lo Aleinu, but I think it would be okay to keep the Shulchan Aruch. The constituents are not going to notice so much. Like, as long as they see he's torn, then they'll be okay. One can make their own judgment depending on where your rabbi, etc. Dali, Kamishanata and Lama saying Rashonli Pari Manikur Shiltase and Afshu Yechidi. Once a person is about to die, you're not allowed to leave him. Because you can't let him die, let him expire when he is alone. And the Taz says that because the soul is distraught. Yeah, it's stronger than distraught. The soul is very distraught if it leaves alone, and therefore it is a tremendous pain to the soul of the mace to expire alone, and therefore we should stay with him. Here he quotes they found an asmachta for this. It says, the soul will be assured, will feel confident of this eternal life and not going to Gehenna. When people see him die, I know that's not the pashim shot of the pasuk. That's an asmachta. That when will the soul be able to leave comfortably and feel that they're going to get to Gan Eden, not Gehenna? If
someone sees them dying, someone's with them, and therefore it is very important to be with someone, not only before they die to give them comfort in the physical sense, but also when they die to give the neshama comfort. The minig is to pour, yes?
That wasn't saying that it's good for you. That was saying that it's good for you. I mean, not from the Taz's mystical side of, like, you know, the soul being distressed. Hmm. As much as this way, when you observe it, then you, like, are...
Maybe. Okay, maybe you're right. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Right.
Not sure. Hey, the minig is to pour out all the drawn water, meaning, like, all the, not what's in the faucet or what's in the well, but all the water that's in any type of utensil, that's in the shchuna of the mace. Why is this? So the poskim bring two reasons. Who brings two reasons? The shach brings both reasons, even though the taz only brings one reason. The shach brings two reasons. Number one is, in order that people know someone died, they see pouring out water, they'll know someone died, because there's an inyan, not to share bad, even though nowadays people love to share news, good, bad, and different, but al pi halacha, you should share good news, but you're not supposed to say bad things. So you shouldn't even share bad news of a death, and therefore, how would they share bad news of the death without actually going and telling all the relatives, you should know Plony died, they would pour out the water, and that would be a simen, without having to say bad things. That's one reason. The second reason is because the Malach HaMaves, he wets his knife in the water in the that's near the person who is expiring, and therefore it is sakana to drink that water. Okay, I don't know exactly what it means that he wets his knife in that water, but it seems to be some mystical sakana to drink that water. The nafgamina between these reasons would be, for example, the discussion in, I think, Rabbi Akiva Eiger and the Pesachei Tshuva here. What about a what about a nefel? Or what about a goy who dies? In those cases, there's no need to inform everyone, because in a nefel there's no avelus, and in a goy there's no avelus. They don't have to do anything, right? There's no need to tell. You have to tell people if a Jew died, because there's a lot of things, the responsibilities incumbent upon them. But if a nefel died, or if a guy died, there's no need to inform people. You can keep it quiet, right? There's no halachic obligations. And therefore, if you say the reason is lahodiyah, or because of sakana, if the mace is a nefel, or akum, if it's lahodiyah, then you're pater from pouring out. If it's sakana, then you are chayiv to pour it out. Another nafkumin of this might be the discussion also in the next line of the Pesachei Tshuvos of Katan Dalet. He says, what about Bishel b'mayim zeh bidyevet? What if you bidyevet already cooked this water? Let's say you baked it into challah or something, right? Or you cooked soup with it. Or let's say baked into challah. That's a great example. Right now, you can't pour it out anymore. It's not liquid anymore, right? There's no way to pour it out anymore. You already made it into something else. So, like, you could throw your challah on the street, but that wouldn't help, because then no one would know why you're throwing your challah on the street. So if the reason is lahodiyah, then you are potter. If the reason is sakana, then it would be aser to eat this, because it has sakana within it. And therefore, you don't want to eat something that has poison in it, even though it's always hard to tell when the poison will work, when it won't, but you don't want to take your chances. So that would also be a nafkamina. Lemaisa, the achrona are machmer in these things. Hamir sakanta beisura, even sakanas that are not physical but are mystical and we don't really understand are still chamer beisura. And lemaisa, we say that you're chayiv even if there's no need to inform people because there's no mitzvah of halvayis hameis and kvura and nichum aveilim, etc. Or even if you can't actually pour down in a way that will inform people, because you're already baking your challah, you should throw your challah in the in the garbage. The only exception is the poskim discuss, what about on Shabbos? What about on Shabbos? Rabbi Kiva Eger brings down here that, I mean, there's a few other discussion. Well, one other possible nafkamina that Pesach Tshuva brings down is, you know, what if, let's say, you didn't pour it in time, could you use it for laundry or such? But let's say you didn't pour it on time, you find it 3 days later. So, I mean, that would be another nafkamina. Here's another great nafkamina. What if lo shafach b'shato, and now it's 3 days later. So, if it's lo dia, you'd be putter, right? Umatzamayim achrei kama yomim. You'd be potter because it's no telling anyone now. Everyone knows by now. But if it's sakana, you'd still be chayav. And then there's a whole discussion. What if you want to use it for laundry? Like, would that also be, right? And the Pesachei Tshuva quotes machlokas, could use it for laundry, ends up being mekel, says it's only sakana to drink it. However, here's a case where they say is not enough kamina. What about mace b'shabbos? Mace b'shabbos, should you pour out the water or not? If it's lodiyah, you're potter, because you're not supposed to tell people someone died on Shabbos. Adrab, on Shabbos, you have to keep it quiet. There's no halayis hameis on Shabbos. But if it's because of sakana, so we say that also potter. Why? Because the Malach HaMavis has different procedures on Shabbos than on a weekday. On a weekday, he leaves his poison in all the water nearby. On Shabbos, he does not. Even the Malach HaMavis respects Shabbos. He still kills people on Shabbos. But he kills people with minimum chil Shabbos, and he doesn't leave poison around, and he doesn't even sharpen his knife. So therefore, lemaisa on Shabbos were mekel. There's a big discussion: should you then pour it out matzah Shabbos? And the poskim assume that you don't have to.
According to the first time, shouldn't you have to? Even if you don't nowadays, we don't have water lying around. We have faucets, but you should have to pour out the water, take a cup of water, and pour it out.
It's an interesting question. The truth is that I wonder if perhaps this might be the nafkamina of, of how about this case? Mace b'Shabbos, your potter. But what about, right, Yotzah HaShabbos? What if Shabbos ends? Then if it's sakana, you're still potter because there was never sakana. The Malach HaMavis came on Shabbos, and on Shabbos he doesn't sharpen his knife. Apparently you need water to sharpen knives. I don't know. If anyone ever learned shkita or something, you need water to sharpen knives properly. So he didn't like dip his knife in the water to sharpen it. But if it's lodia, then you are chayiv. And that's what it says in the Pesachei Tshuva. You're right. You should have to still pour it out. I know this is not your case yet. On Matzei Shabbos, however, says the Gesher HaChayim, he says the minhag is lahakel. So it could be that the Gesher HaChayim assumes that we are not mochber both ways. We paskin like the tzad of sakana, and not like the tzad of hoda'ah, and that's why we don't pour it out on Matzah Shabbos. Oh, normally Matzah Shabbos, don't you have to tell all the neighbors? No, the Gesher HaChayim says, minigus b'mekel, apparently we're not chosher hoda'ah, which then explains Zeb's question. Nowadays, first of all, we do have mayim she'uvim. People do have bottles of water, and they have pitchers of water. We do have mayim she'uvim nowadays. But let's say you don't have mayim she'uvim. Should you just fill up a pitcher and pour it outside? Wouldn't you think for hodah you should have to? So maybe the answer is we really paskin sakana and not hodah is the ikar reason. And that's why we're not machra of that. Against the Pesachei Tshuva. The Gesher HaChayim says the minhag is against the Pesachei Tshuva.
And what about our pitchers of water?
What about our pitchers of water? We should pour them out. Now, why don't you see everyone doing that nowadays? Why don't you see, after all, we've all been at plenty of funerals. We all know lots of people's relatives died, lo aleinu. Why don't we see them all pouring out water? The answer is very simple. Because, here's another great nafkamina. Okay. And that there you see that we're really not makbid on hodah. What about l'chora? This, I'm just making up this nafkamina, right? But l'chora, you could have two cases, right? What if, here, ein lo mayim she'uvim. So if it's hodah, ulai chayav lisho v'lishpoch. But if it's because sakana, you're obviously pater, a better case. What about nowadays, mace b'veit cholim. Nowadays, why? Because hardly anyone dies at home anymore. Okay, I have a Rebbe whose parents lived up on Rehov Chachmi, whose father died at home. But it was a very rare thing because he said that the doctors came and they were,
upset that he's wasn't hooked up to all kinds of machines in the hospital, and he died like without having a proper medical diagnosis, just because he was 100 years old, and got old and died, and that's illegal nowadays. Okay, in the end, they let it go with the Evid, but some people still die at home. Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal, he died at home, just because, you know, he died suddenly. So we do know sometimes people die at home because either, very rarely, they don't go to a hospital, or a little more commonly, they die suddenly without advance warning. But most people die in hospitals nowadays. You know, if someone has an accident, they take the hospital. If someone's sick, they end up in the hospital. So most people die in hospitals nowadays. So what if someone died in the hospital? You would think that if it was Lahodia, then you'd be chayev to pour from the house, right? Uli chayev lishpoch bebeiso. If it's mishum sakana, then potter bebeiso. What do you mean? What sakana is there in the house? Malchabov's in the hospital. It's 20 miles away. Malchabov's didn't come near his house. And lamaisa, the minig nowadays, that we don't pour, right? So it seems to be that our minig, like the Gesher Chayim, is in all these cases, we don't pour because we assume that we're not makna lodia nowadays, especially since nowadays there are other ways people know. So it seems to be nowadays we're only makna the sakana. So ain't a chayim. If someone dies at home, then you should pour out the water. But since people usually don't die at home, we don't see people doing that too often.
Hospital, yeah.
What?
You have to go around the hospital.
What about the water in the hospital? So in a Hanami, you should have to pour out the Mayim She'uvim in the hospital. It could be that in the hospital there isn't as much Mayim She'uvim as there is at home.
Is it whole home, not just a room where
Okay, so let me just point out two last things. The two last things are, number one, the Shach already tells us, right? The Shach tells us that Sif Tes Shomer Mitzvah Lo Yeda Dovar Ra. Sif Katan Tes, I mean, sorry. She'ein Lishmach Mayim Shalonu Mipei Neis. Mayim Shalonu, again, don't have the same joke as in the Gemara. It doesn't mean our water. It means water that, right? Water is plural. So Mayim Shalonu means water that slept overnight. When do you need water that slept overnight? For baking matzahs, right? You're not allowed to bake matzahs with water drawn that day. You have to let it sit overnight. And therefore, if you have Mayim Shalonu for baking matzahs, what's the problem? If you pour it out, you can't bake matzah. And therefore he says, no, for a mitzvah saves you from sakana. Clearly, the mitzvah matzah is more important than l'odia. And even if the reason is sakana, a mitzvah saves you for sakana. And therefore, you do not have to pour out the Mayim Shalonu.
You don't have to pour out the Mayim Shalonu because the mitzvah saves you from sakana. And that's how we paskin. Okay, nowadays it's not much of an afkamina because we don't bake matzahs at home. They have a factory someplace and no one dies next to the factory, usually.
If someone died in a matzah factory, would they suspend for...
So if someone died in a matzah factory, they could keep using the Mayim Shalonu because the mitzvah takes away the sakana. That's a mefurish pesach of the Taz, quoting Rishonim. And likewise, therefore, if someone already cooked food and that's your Shabbos food, you can also eat it because the mitzvah saves you from the sakana. Okay. The big question is, what's a shchuna? What's a shchuna? Like, if you live in Kew Gardens, is Kew Gardens your shchuna? If you live in Bayit Vegan, is Bayit Vegan your shchuna? That's a lot of people. I mean, someone probably, I don't know what neighborhood, if you live in Kerem, then you have to pour out your water every 2 minutes, probably. I mean, lo aleinu, how do I know you die? But I don't know how it works in hospitals, but astam, people die fairly frequently in the hospital. So, or if you live in Beit HaKerem, or whatever you consider it to be, you better hope it's not considered Bayit Vegan, where Sharet Tzedek is. Then, so, the answer is no. What's a shchuna? A shchuna is three houses. The question is, what is three houses, right? The Kaswa Tosas, the shchuna hayin shlosh shabbatim, I am quoting from the Taz. A shchuna is three houses. The question is, what do we mean a shchuna is three houses? And this is very controversial. It's even controversial what the shach means. The Gilyon Maharsha on the side here says, or minus on the bottom, wherever it is, Hainu beis batami kol tzad shel beis hamis. It means, what's a shchuna? Three houses in each direction. So if here is the house where someone died, then it's 1, 2, 3 houses to the right, and 1, 2, 3 houses to the left, sacha kol 5 houses. That's how many understand the Taz. However, the Nekudas HaKesef says,
Only mamish the next door neighbor. And the Achronim say that's also three houses. Him and the Shachin, this side is three houses. So they're not even sure what? Nekudas HaKasef of the Shach on the side. So we're not sure what these three houses means. Right? There are two ways. Even on the daf, the Gilyon Meir Shah says three houses means five houses. And the Shach says three houses means three houses. Okay, it's not exactly, we're not sure how we paskin on this. In their modern day poskim, they give different minhagim on this in terms of how we paskin. Yes?
Doesn't the Shach want me to argue on the Taz, though?
The Shach means to argue on the Taz.
So I'm saying the Taz.
He seems to understand the Taz.
See, maybe the Taz meant that Rebbe just wrote the Shach.
I know. I said we're not sure what the Taz means.
Right. I mean, okay, fine.
We're not sure what the Taz means. The Gilyon Meir Shach clearly understood the first way. The Shach clearly understood the second way. We're not sure what the Taz meant.
But what did the Shach itself mean then?
What?
I mean, doesn't the Shach say, Havkar Shkuna Mishu Shachin Mamish?
The next door neighbor. Next door neighbor.
Me, you don't think that he could have understood the Taz as this and then said, no, like it could be something that's even closer than next door? Meaning, like, let's say it's only
no,
if you're actually
so.
Next door versus
I don't
like,
think so. I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, even though it's a big discussion, what if you have a path in between, what if you have a street in between, what about apartment buildings, what about chatzeros, etc. The Shach says, they hear it's a big machlokas. The Gesher HaChaim says that there are two different minhagim, although he seems to say this more standard minhag is like the Shach. And therefore, it wouldn't hurt to be machmer and sakana, but the minhag, you know, the minhag seems to be like the Shach. What about hospitals, etc.? So it could be that it would be enough to be machmir on just the rooms next door. Although it's not clear. Maybe the whole hospital is one building and then the guy next door to the hospital in one way and the guy next door to the hospital in the other way. Unclear. Lemaisa, otherwise if you're in a hospital, what are you going to do? You're in a hospital, you have water, someone dies in the hospital all the time. Lemaisa, nearer there won't be so mech on the Shach here, and we have enough kormers in Sakana. Because of Sakana, we already were machmir a few things already. And therefore, you know, one can be makel only if you're next door to the room where the fellow died.
Is this drinking water, food water, as opposed to flour, water in the flour pot?
Can you water flowers? Is a great question.
Or I meant if it was already in.
No, if it was already in the flour pot, then it's not water. Then it's wet soil. Yes.
What if it's in a vase, not in soil?
Oh, what about that? That's a great question. After all, you're just going to pour it out anyway. It's just going to look pretty. You're just going to pour it out anyway. Narrowly, especially since the Pesachei Tshuva thinks you can even do laundry and do a shower in it. So here, where you're not even going to touch it, you're just going to pour it out later. Narrowly, mafim
l'ha. You don't just think that the minhag, like the reason why none of us pour out water is just because more simply, like we assume the first reason.
Meaning we're not choshes for sakana. And lohdia, we have other ways of lohdia nowadays.
I mean, especially because,
and no one would get it anyway.
Especially because the sakana isn't one of the ones that's like found in the modern way. It's like a more recent.
Okay.
And now
sorry, Ian. Okay. Why? Chance to bring up a good question. Why don't we see people in makba nowadays? Lamaisa, there are two explanations. Either we just are not choshes for the sakana. We assume it's lohdia nowadays. People wouldn't get it, so we don't have this minhag. Or maybe we are koshesh in the circumstances, just they don't come up so much. Okay, yesh la'ayin. It sounds like water.
Are we only talking about open vessels or even closed?
It doesn't say only open.
So the Malcolm is putting it into bottles?
It's not the Malcolm Amos.
Totally.
I don't know. It's not so posh that... Malcolm Amos is a lot more powerful than you think. Okay, Chesky, you got the word. Let's go weiter. Now we're getting to hardcore Hilchos Avelos, even though technically the word says Kriya Luchan Avelos, but the Kriya is technically different from Avelos. Nonetheless, many of the halachos are similar. So let's start with Kriya. Shimon Shin Mem says, "Call Misha Meisul 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 Meisul." Someone whose relative died, he's one of the close relatives who you sit Shiva for. Which we'll learn are a husband and wife and a son and a daughter and a brother and a sister and a mother and a father. Chayav likrolav has to tir kriya. V'tzorach sheyikra me'umad v'mkara me'yushav lo yatsa. You must hear standing up. That is a mefurish in the Gemara. That you must tir standing up. The
There might be a machlokas rishonim about this. The Torah thinks a machlokas rishonim about this. But in any case, the vast majority of all the rishonim say it's even makib b'dieved. Tearing must be standing up. That's how we paskin. You must tear standing up. And karbi yushim bo yotza. Tzarech lachso to pour up someone's tour sitting down. Then they weren't yotza at all. And they have to tear kriya all over again. Add the ramah ulchatchila. Tzarech lekroa kodem shiesto b'neim eis. Kriya will see is connected to something called chimum. Chima means not physically getting hot, it means getting emotional, right? Kriya has to be at the time when there is a lot of emotion, and that's why the Mechaber said in the last simon that someone should do kriya when the mace dies. That's very emotional. But nowadays, most of the time, we don't do kriya when the mace dies, so therefore it's the minute. The minute is to do kriya at the funeral, because the funeral is the next emotional time period. Says the Ramai just says has to be before you cover up the mace, meaning before you cover up the grave. Sometime between death and when you cover up the grave, lechachila, because that's the time of the greatest emotional. Give me a good word for chimum here. Heightened emotions. So the Ramai just says between death and the end of the funeral. The minhag nowadays that it's either death or at the time of the funeral, because in between is not as emotional. Death is very emotional. The funeral is very emotional. In between is not quite as emotional. So the minhag nowadays that we generally do it at the funeral, because that the death and the funeral are the two most emotional moments of what we call chimum. Excuse me. Now, one already here from the shach says the shach. Two haras here. The Shach in Gimel says something that we already saw in the Mechaber last Simon, that the minig is tir kriya when you say the brach of Dayan Ha'emes. That's what you see in every funeral. Lo'aleinu. The Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara doesn't connect them. But the minig is to connect them, and it makes sense because those are the times when you really... Dayan Ha'emes is about the news. And kriya is also about the news. Kriya is not just about being sad. It's about the proper reaction to the news of someone dying. That's what it has to be b'shas chimum, when you get very distraught over the news. And therefore, Shmuel's Rose is dying ha'emes, and Kriya will see also for Shmuel's Rose. These are both things that you would do, even chas v'shalom lo'aleinu, for other bad news, other than someone, a relative dying. So therefore, they go together. Important shas of cutting days, he says, midrabanan v'asmechua akra. Anyone know what's the kra the asmechua on? That you have to tear Kriya when the relative dies?
Does Yosef, what happens when Yaakov dies?
I don't think he hears Kriya. Okay, but Eov, yes, but how about in the Torah? It's a Miklal Hainat Hashemayel Lav, right? After Navio dies, it says, Roshechem al Tefro v'lo Sifromu, right? Lo Sifromu, Pore means to tear clothing. Don't tear your clothing or else you'll die. The Diuk is, but a normal Avot would tear his clothing. And not only that, Chazal say, a normal Avot will tear his clothing, and if not, he'll die. If someone doesn't tear kriya, they're chaymisa b'dei shamayim for not caring that their relative passed away. Here we have a big machlokas. The Ravid is a das yochid says it's a doraisa. When it's chaymisa b'dei shamayim, it's mamash doraisa. Wait, you ever heard of being chaymisa b'dei shamayim? Something it's not even necessarily doraisa. So the Ravid says it's mamash doraisa. The diuk from Nadav and Avihu, they should not tear and not die. But anyone else, if they don't tear, they do die. Which the diuk is that the chiv doraisa of kriya and chaymisa b'dei shamayim. All the other Rishonim say not that way. They say it's a drabana and it's a smachta. Hashem is merely telling Adam Avihu, a lot of people have the custom on their own of tearing their clothing, and you shouldn't do it. It's not really a diuk in halacha. It's just a diuk in the minhag olam in ancient times was that people tore their clothing and the relative dies. And Hashem told, not Adam Avihu, they were dead, Elazar and Tamar, and Aaron, not to tear their clothing. So it's just an asmachta. We pass it just an asmachta. Why are you chayim misa b'dei shamayim? So Yishonim say, some new violates. The words of the Chacham is Chayim Misa B'dei Shemayim. Pour it together, Yishchenu Nachash. So even though the simple pshat is that it's a Doraisa, the Chayim Misa B'dei Shemayim from a Pasuk, like the Ravid, all the other Rishonim disagree, and we pass like all the other Rishonim, it's merely Drabanan. The cross in Asmachta, it was not actually meant for a halachic deal. It was just referring to the Minhag Olam in ancient times. And you only Chayim Misa B'dei Shemayim the same way you're Chayim Misa B'dei Shemayim for violating any other Drabanan, which is not like a literal Chayim Misa B'dei Shemayim. That's how we paskin.
Just to go back for a second, it's a different thing. You said that was part of like the proper reaction. Aren't they like the opposite, but you said that they're both complementary? Like the Tita Gaten is saying, I believe, like, yeah, how does that, like, how does it fit in? Can you explain what you meant by the, like, proper?
Okay, so Chesky's asking, aren't they opposite reactions? When someone tears their clothing, they're saying that they are tremendously distraught. They can't handle this news. They can't live like this. That's why they're tearing their clothing. When someone says Dina MS, they're saying they accept their matzdik the din. So how are these two things supposed to go together? So I think the answer is that maybe Davka, these two things have to go together because you want to avoid an imbalance. Right? If someone just tears their clothing and wails and screams and doesn't say Dina MS, then it seems like they're a kofar, that they're saying, no, God's running the world wrong. And that would be problematic. On the other hand, if someone just said Dain Ha'emes and Siddiqa Din and didn't hear Kriya, it would seem like they're insensitive. And they're saying, well, since God runs the world, then it's all good. And who cares if my relative lives or dies? Who cares if someone dies or someone's born? It's all good because I'm Kol Latova and I don't care. And even though someone might be tempted to say that's the right hashkafa, that is, in fact, not the right hashkafa. As Rav Lichtenstein was fond of pointing out, the mission in Brachos says, Kishem Shavarchim al Tova Kachim Barchim al Ra'ah. You bless Hashem for the good and the bad, but you don't say the same bracha. For the good, you say Yatoma Meitiv, and for the bad, you say Dayan Ha'emes, meaning it's important to balance our belief that Hashem runs the world and everything that happens is for a reason. He knows what he's doing better than we do, with our humanity and sensitivity, that doesn't mean that we're stoics and we don't care what happens to anyone and we don't, you know, 100 million people die. We say, oh, great, it was God's plan. I'm just as happy as if I was at a bris milah. And a chasana. That would be very inhumane and insensitive, and so maybe it's important to balance those.
I'm assuming the same halacha, but let's say someone just feels so distant from the person who died and have no emotion about it, like they still say the bracha b'shem malchus.
Yes, they still say the bracha b'shem malchus, because it is still, first of all, theoretically, it doesn't have to be a relative me'ikra din. Anyway, they still say the bracha b'shem malchus because they should feel that way, and it's objectively a loss for them if their relative dies. Even if they don't feel it, it's still objectively a loss, and even if they don't feel the kriya, they still have to feel it as much as possible, and maybe that's the threat of misa v'di shemayim, right?
It could also, part of it could be maybe that it's kavod ames.
Right, so it could also be an inyan of kavod ames, exactly. So that's always the tricky part of avelos. We discussed this in Hilch. No matter what year you're in, you learn this in Sukkah Daf Chaf Hey. Is the Ikar of Avelos just about showing something on the outside or about feeling it on the inside, which can both be called Kavod Ames, but one is a deeper Kavod Ames and one is a more external Kavod Ames. So you could take Kriya either way. You don't have to take it the same way because Kriya L'chud Avelos L'chud, and it's hard to prove. Okay, let's just mention one other thing which is very practical. Halacha L'maisa, the Pischei Tshuva Sif Katan Aleph. The Pischei Tshuva Sif Katan Aleph says that the Birkei Yosef says someone else should tear your clothing because it's more agmas nefesh. It's sadder if someone else tears your clothing. This is very, very unclear because a lot of achronim, such as the Shut Beis Yehuda, says, no, Adrava, mitzvah yosef mishlucho. Kriya is a mitzvah. You shouldn't have someone else do a mitzvah. You should do the mitzvah yourself. The minhag ha'olam is to have our cake and eat it too, lo aleinu. The minhag ha'olam is for someone else to tear and for the oval to tear himself. How so? Anyone ever been in a levayah and noticed?
They start.
The rabbi always starts, and then the avel, a kol shehu, and then the avel continues. That's also very good practically because we have very good quality clothing nowadays. To start, you need a knife, a razor blade. Right, you ever go to the koton and try to do it with your hands and it's exceedingly awkward? Right, to continue is very simple. Like, if you ever go to the koton, it's really hard to start because our clothing are well made and they have good edges. And then it's very easy to continue. So this way, you don't want to trust the elbow with a razor blade. He's not going to be, he's not composed and is not going to be careful enough. So the rabbi starts and the elbow finishes. That way you yotze both the Birkei Yosef and the Beis Yehuda. And it's very practical that way. The very important halacha is that the rabbi or some other man from the Chevra Kedisha, etc., starts for the male relatives, and the rabbitson or some other woman in charge starts the female relatives, because it's not tznius for a man to even start a culture of cutting a woman's clothing. To grab a woman's clothing and cut it is not tznius, and therefore it's required that a man start for a man and a woman start for a woman. If there's no woman around, then don't do the minhag of starting for someone.
The last thing, the Pesach Teshuvah, also something not so relevant to us, says it's usher to tear more than the required shear because of Baal Tashchis. Okay, once upon a time, they would tear their clothes and then they would reuse it and re-sew it, etc. And then it was Baal Tashchis to tear more than necessary. I'm pretty sure that nowadays, once you tear your clothing, you just throw it in the garbage. It doesn't really, no one's going to do anything with it. I think just our society has changed, and I don't think it's Baal Tashchis to tear more than necessary nowadays, because it's just going in the garbage anyway. Sif Beis. Makom akriyah b'chol makom v'satzavar lefonavol akar la'achmar v'obushulei abegadom and it's not in lo yatsa. The makom of kriya is any place of the front of the neck. But if you hear from the back of the neck or from the bottom of the shirt or from the side, you're not yotze. Here, there's a big deal, and I'm not going into all the Rishonim exactly what it means. The side, meaning, does it mean the side of the clothing you're not yotze or even the side of the neck you're not yotze? Lemaisa, the Divrei Sofrim here, which is one of the Sfarim I told you, the Kotz Machronim, he understands that it's a little funny. If you just read the Ramah, you might say, "Oh, b'shuli abegadom and etzadim." Yeah, from the bottom of the clothes or the side of the clothes, you're not yotze. But if you read the Mechaber, he says, without the Ramah, "Avolim kar la'achrov and etzadim," in any place of the front of the Beis Hatzavar, but not the back or the sides, clearly of the Beis Hatzavar. This is a big mess in the Beis Yosef, and they're showing them how everyone understood the Ramban. Halacha l'maisa, we are machmer like shot in the Mechaber, that not only you're not yotze in the side of the shirt, you're not yotze in the side of the neck either, and therefore you have to start from someplace in the front of the neck. And then tear it downwards. The Pesachei Tshuvos of Katan Beis also quotes from the Chachmas Adam and the Radvaz, let's say you start from the right place, but you tear sideways. Even though I'm not sure exactly how this works with our modern-day clothing, he says, let's say you start the right place, but you tear sideways instead of downwards. He says you're not yotzei because it just looked like it ripped stam and it doesn't look like someone ripped it on purpose. Okay, our clothing, I think it would still look like someone ripped it on purpose, but lemaisa, we are still machmed that you have to start from the front of the neck and tear downwards, not sideways like every ugly you've ever seen, like this Pesachei Tshuvah. Okay, so if continuing the Ramah, v'yish omer sheyotzein korei b'shulei abeged. There are some people who say you're yotze if you tear from the bottom. Okay, this is really machlokes tanan between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. We don't pass like Rabbi Yehuda. So some people, for some reason, pass like Rabbi Yehuda. V'cheino g'lohakel l'chor b'shulei abeged, shekoron al shar meisr shemes ablolim. The minigolim should be makel to tear from the bottom. Why would they tear from the bottom? Because if you tear from the bottom, then you wouldn't ruin your shirt. Right? You can imagine, right? I untuck my shirt, tear from the bottom, a tefach. And then I can still sew it up and wear it, and it's not so noticeable. So people were minig, and Ashkenaz was to be makel for non-relatives to tear from the bottom. Although Mason Shane Krov Misabel, any else who cares over Krov, Vesa Sabrachay Nagu. But on relatives, you're chayav to be Misabel for, then there was never a minig lahakel, and you have to tear the right way from the neck. Lemaisa, we'll see soon nowadays that we're not no hate to tear for non-relatives so much anyway, so it's not enough kamina. We're only knowing to tear from relatives, and we can only tear in the right place. Sif Gimel, Shir Kriya Tefach. You have to tear at least a tefach. Again, Pesachei Tshuvah says not more than a tefach, but nowadays, I don't think we have to worry about it because it's not Baal Tashchis. V'im kar al meisa b'lehosa b'osa kriya al meisa achir. What if someone tore their shirt for one mace? Their lowling and their brother died, and then their sister died, and then you have to tear more. Im achir zayin sag b'kol shu. If it's after Shiva, it's enough to tear a kol shu. V'im hubesok zayin sarach tefach. If it's within Shiva, then they have to add another tefach. Okay, the lumda seems to be, we'll see later on, you have to keep the torn garment on you the whole Shiva. And therefore, if it's within Shiva, they still need the tefach for the original kiyum. So they have to add another tefach for the second kiyum. If it's after Shiva, they don't need a torn garment anymore. So therefore, all they have to add is a kol shuv, and then they already have a tefach, and the tefach counts for the new mace because they don't need the tefach for the old mace. They need your kol shuv, so they'll do something. But they can count the tefach that's already there because they don't need it anymore for the old mace. Excuse me. For the mother and father, if there's already something, even if it's after Shiva, for the mother and father, tefach's not enough anyway, so it's irrelevant. For the mother and the father, they have to tear all the way down till they reveal their heart, meaning to below the location of their heart. Sif Dalit. That's all in general, correct. I mean, what he's saying is if someone's parent died, there's no nafkamina, because even if it was a new shirt, they'd have to tear all the way to reveal their heart. So if it's a partially torn shirt, they still have to tear all the way to reveal their heart. Exactly. Just like people, if someone has to tear for their relative, they have to tear in front of their relative if their relative's relative died. If someone's grandson or son's brother, obviously you would have to have like a remarriage in order for a son to have a brother who wasn't also your son. Aim beno, or your son's mother, meaning, but you're got divorced, so she's not related to you anymore. Chayv lekrov b'nei beno, and this is just an example. Basically, it's not so clear. It could be that in the riff, maybe he does not hold this true for all relatives, but all the other rishonim paskin, this is true for all relatives, that when it's time, if my relative's relative died, I don't have to tear. But if I'm in front of that relative, then I have to tear. But likewise, for a wife, it's different. He is not, the Shulchan Aruch is not so mefurish here, but it's mefurish in the Rishonim and in the Shach here. For a wife, only for the wife's parents, not for the wife's other relatives. So for a blood relative, for the blood relatives, all of the blood relatives' relatives. But for my wife, only for in-laws, or a husband, only for in-laws, not for other relatives, because you're closer to your blood relative's relative, and you're not so close to your wife's relatives, unless they're your in-laws, when there's a special inyan of kavod. In any case, says Rai Nogan, Achshav King, when she's probably coming, she's saying, Dalla, Avelus, we have a myth, you're also supposed to keep Avelus when you're in front of your relative who's sitting shiva for his relative. Nowadays, we don't have that minhag, everyone was mochal that nowadays. The assumption seems to be, it's, who is the chi of klapi? If someone's son's son dies, are they chayv to tear because their grandson or because they're covered to their son? So the answer is only covered to their son, because they only have to tear if their son's there. So they have to to participate in the suffering of their relative, they have to tear. Nowadays, everyone with all the available are no way to be mochalist, so we don't keep it anymore nowadays. You only tear on a first degree relative. Hey, ha'omeg b'shasi yishama. Here's the Gemara Mekutin, yeah? Okay, lo aleinu. No one give me an ayin hara here. If you have like a crew neck kind of thing, then it's just like from here, here, here. If you have a shirt, then it would be either any place in the front, from here or from here. You're allowed to go from here. That also counts at the top, right? If you don't button this button.
What counts as this counts as the top?
Yeah, I could start here. This is the front, right? Or I could start here or here. Or here, that's all considered the front. In jackets.
And what about like starting from here?
No, because that's not the top. It has to be the top. You know, it's allowed to be the top and the buttons unbuttoned. That's a normal way to wear. In jackets, where do you start from? So people usually start from here, if you have to tear jackets, right? Because this is like the front of the neck, even though there's no neck. So they start from here.
Are we going to get to that?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Now, I mean, I hope.
If you don't start.
Start below, so we'll see. That depends what kind of relative it was. Okay, we'll see that in Tess, I think. Or in Yud Beis. Sorry. Okay, first let's go to Hey. Who do you have to tear for besides relatives? I'm not going through all the Rishonim here. I'm maybe going to stick to Maskanas, because the hour's a little late. Someone who stands, who is present when any Jewish man or woman dies, is Chayev to tear Kriya. Even if sometimes they do an Avir L'Te'avon, or they don't do a mitzvah because it's too hard for them, meaning even if they're not a tzaddik, and they sometimes do a Averos, you still have to tear. But if someone always does an Avera, or they say if someone does an Avera L'Hachis and it's a kofir, then you do not do this. For sure, for someone who converted to another religion. Before we get to those halachas, before we get to those halachas, here is the halacha. If someone is present when another Jew dies, they have to do a kriya. Here we have a big chakira as to why that is. Rashi is quoted as saying, because of all the Torah they could have learned. And the Ramban argues with him, and Rashi also really doesn't say that. There seem to be three opinions about this. Rashi.
Rashi is quoted as saying that Torah shehaya yachol lilmo, Torah he could have learned. Rashi in one place and the Ramban, I don't know if I wrote down, I don't want to take time to look up in which Masechet Rashi says which. Varesh has two things in two different Masechtas. Chesky can tell me. And the Ramban say, because, or at least Rashi in the Gemara says, sorry, I should take that back for a second. It's Doma Lesefer Torah Shenisraf. It's like a Sefer Torah Shenisraf. So Rashi says, it means he would have learned a lot of Torah if he had lived. Rashi, other places, says no, because every Jew is Mole Torah Mitzvos. Every Jew has Torah Mitzvos. And Rashi, did you find that?
One of them is an A.
And where, what does it say there?
It's wherever the Ramban is quoting from. It's just it's shot. I'm trying to find that, sorry.
Just quote, read me Rashi.
The first one?
Yeah.
One Rashi, paragraph of Eliezer.
From what? Paragraph Eliezer.
So there you go. It's Gossip of the Sefer Torah, Shnishra Farah, Chai, Bukra, Ach, Nishra, Sestra, Dome, Lo, She'emo.
Yeah, that's in Shabbos. Okay, so Rashi in Shabbos, but there's also Rashi in Moed Katan.
Right.
What does he say there? Exactly, because a neshama is like a Sefer Torah. Just the precious neshama.
The first Rashi is...
Ramban quotes it, but we don't have it.
It's probably an interpretation
of the model. It could be. It could be, but it's hard to tell. The big nafkamina is what about Isha, who's potter from Talmud Torah. So this phantom Rashi that doesn't actually exist would say that you're potter. And that's what the Ramban argues with him and can't handle. And the Ramban says, no, for sure Chayev, that's wrong. And as a matter of fact, we don't even have a Rashi who says that. The other interesting nafkamina, though, that comes up in the Shulchan Aruch is, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch says, Isha Isha La'afuke, from that possibly existing, possibly non-existing Rashi, who might hold that it's only an Ish and not an Isha. The question is, what about a Katan? Right? What about a Katan? So, if it's could be full of Torah Mitzvos, then maybe a Katan is not. He didn't do anything yet. He didn't do any Torah Mitzvos yet. And you should be Potter. And that's what the Shach and Taz quote the Maharshal as saying. They quote the Maharshal as saying that Potter, okay, this is all theoretical anyway. If you said like Rashi, then Lechora you would say that a Katan is your Chaya for, but a Katana you are Potter. The Bach says, well, if the Katan already learned, then he's already a Gadol. Etc. Lemaisa, the Teferis Lemoshe, quoted in Pesvei Tshuva, says, no, you're chayav bein on katan bein on ektana. Why? Lechor, because the old is just the precious of a soul. Okay, so every soul is precious, even a katan ektana who haven't done any mitzvos. Potter, unless he already, learns, and I guess, yes? I guess not. It's an interesting question. Unless the Bach thinks that only Torah means you have to have started learning Torah. Maybe after the Bach is here, a Katan learns Torah, it only counts if he started learning. Less clear. Anyway, Halach Lemaisa, we'll see this is not Halach Lemaisa. Or maybe it is. Anyway, this is the different shitas. The Pashup Shad is that we probably hold, like Rashi Mokatan, it's any soul like the Tiferes Lemoshe. The Pesach Shavuot also quotes the Radvaz saying, let's say a guy turns around as the guy dies. That doesn't help. If he's in the room, he's chayav, even if he turns around. You can't like make excuses to get out of this. To get out of this chayav. Obviously, the big kasha is, how come nowadays no one's machbid on this? Right? How come nowadays we're not machbid on this? So the Achronim write that the reason we're not machbid on this is because I guess there was, I don't know what the case was, it was Yeridus Hadoros or whatever, but what would happen if we were machbid on this? What would everyone do if we told them, you have to tear your clothing if you're in the room with someone who dies? What would they all do?
Not go to the room.
They would leave and the guy's about to die and they would violate Simon Shin Lama Tess, Seif Dalid,
right? And then they would be meshamim his soul, and they would cause him all kinds of spiritual suffering. And therefore, in the modern day times, we decided that since you have to choose the lesser of two evils, either people will neglect the chi of kriya when someone dies, or they'll leave him alone to die alone, better not to leave him alone. And therefore, as it's some sort of the minhag takan of the achronim, the Divrei Sofer here quotes this from a whole bunch of achronim, including the Sdei Chemed, and the Maharsham, that nowadays the minhag is that you're not chayiv to tear, because otherwise people will just let people die alone, and then it will be much worse. So it's the lesser of two evils. Okay, what if someone, you know, knows themselves that they could be machmer on this, and they won't come to let people die alone? Then maybe they should be machmer. But lamaisa, the minhag olam is to be mekel. Now, the end of this is a very important discussion, because the rest of this Ramah is not only about this chiv sifhei, it's about avelus in general. What did the Ramah say? That amos ablam olav. Someone who's a Rasha, we don't do avelus at all. And for sure, someone who converted out of the faith, we don't do avelus at all. Meaning even the relatives don't do avelus. Some people say a mummer, meaning someone who converted out, who is killed by goyim, there's avelus for him. There's a machlokes, why? The Shach brings a machlokes. Why? He says, the Levush says, because since the Goyim killed him, he converted to the Goyish religion, the Goyim killed him anyway, he probably did tshuva. And the Shach says, no, even if he didn't do tshuva, since he was killed shelo al pidin, that's a kapara for him. Even the big aveira of the converting to Christianity, if someone is killed by anti-Semites, that is enough of a kapara that it's mechaper for him. And most achronim seem to follow the Shach against the Levush, who says that the heter is because it's a kapara. V'chein momer katan shemim avu imo dahavi ke'anus. And likewise, says the Ramah, we're mis'avel on a minor child who is baptized with his parents because he's an anus, it's not his fault. V'yesh omer te'ei mis'avel v'chein ikar. Some people say we're not mis'avel v'chein ikar. So it's machlokas that's going only on the child or even on the guy who was killed by goyim. Most are going to assume that the guy who was killed by goyim, that's enough of a kapar to be killed by anti-Semites and we're sabal on him. But the kid, let's say a family, decides to be baptized and leave Judaism. And the father and mother and the little kid went, and the father and mother and the little kid die, or the little kid dies, then let's say there's other relatives. Let's say there's an older brother who stayed from, does not sit Shiva because his brother was converted out of the religion. Let's just finish a little. Portion midark et tzibur. Jews who leave the drachim of Judaism, they don't practice their religion. Even though you're not misabel on them, you're misabel on their little kids. Here, it's a little unclear what the Rama is trying to tell us here. The Jew who's a mummer with the little kids, he paskin, kain ikur, not misabel on the little kids. The Jew is porish medarkei tzibur, he paskin, you are misabel on the little kids. So what is pshat in this? The simple pshat seems to be that here it's not so clear. The simple pshat seems to be that maybe there's a difference between someone who's just not from and someone who converted to another religion. Even though strictly halachically, if you go through shas, it's not clear how much of a difference that is. After all, either way, they're not keeping the Torah. But it could be there's still a difference. If someone is not from and they bring their kids up not from, then, you know, certainly if they have little kids, they're still Jews. They're just bad Jews. And therefore, their kids are still Jews, and the kids are little kids, so they can't be good or bad, so they're okay. If someone converts to another religion, even though halachically that has no effect, you can't actually convert out of Judaism halachically, it doesn't work. Nonetheless, they have left their people. When they leave their people, they're leaving the entire Jewish people, and therefore they take their kids with them, and they're no longer the Jewish people, and even their kids are no longer the Jewish people. Here we seem to have a mukkar in halacha, if you read the Ramak Pshuto, that someone who doesn't keep religion at all, is still in the Jewish people, at least their kids are Jewish. Someone who converts out, luckily they're still Jewish, their kids are Jewish. But in terms of how we relate to them, even their kids we don't consider Jewish, because we consider them to have left our people entirely. This is where you get famous Pesachim, like Rav Lichtenstein's Pesachim, not that he was asked to Paskin, he was just asked his opinion, the famous Brother Daniel case, right? Right of return, every Jew has the right to make Aliyah. What about a Jew who converted and became a brother? Brother, is you're a monk? A priest? I guess a monk or something. I don't know, some sort of priest or something. Does he have the right of return?
Api strict halacha. I don't know. We give everyone their, everyone's a Jew, right? He's still a Jew. His kedushin are still tofes. However, Rav Lipsing Paskin, no, there's a difference in someone who is a bad Jew and doesn't keep the Torah versus someone who left the people and taught Jewish people entirely. And therefore, he said, and not that they cared, but the Israeli Supreme Court ended up passing the same way, that we should not give him the right of return. And therefore, from here we see that even nowadays, the Minhag HaOlam, the big question is, what's the Minhag HaOlam about Rishonim nowadays? Right? So the Minhag HaOlam nowadays to assume that the general Mahalach is that people sit Shiva for relatives who aren't from. Someone has a relative who's not from and they pass away, they still sit Shiva. But the assumption of the modern world is that Tinuk Shenishba and it's a very secular world and it's not their fault like it was in the old days. And the general assumption is that every place I've been, again, I don't know what goes on in the Eid HaRedis, but and in Kiryas Yoel. But in the circles that we travel, if someone has a relative who's not Shomer Shabbos and who eats treif and whatever, then they still sit Shiva for them. So they assume it's a Tinuk Shenishba and they're not really such a Rasha. However, if someone has a relative who converted to another religion, you know, was baptized, converted to another religion, then no one sits Shiva for him. We don't say Tinuk Shenishba and start making excuses, so maybe partially just because you're not a Tinuk Shenishba for that, but also it could be that there's some, that Rama is hinting here, that there's some fundamental difference between someone who's not a good Jew versus someone who's not a Jew. Halachically, you can't be not a Jew. But perhaps in terms of your relationship with the Jewish people, you can. And I never heard of anyone sitting Shiva for a relative who converted to... I never heard of anyone sitting Shiva for a relative who converted to another religion. And according to Rama, not even for their kids, even though their kids might be 2 years old and have not even know what's going on because they are out of peoplehood. Okay, let me get that for a second.
Do we consider someone who didn't convert to another religion, but they're secular and they bash Torah and those ideals?
I think that depends who you ask. But I think I guess you have to draw the line someplace, you know, but I think we would try to judge them favorably. I think the you're talking about people who are not from nowadays who were brought up from, or you're talking about the convert, etc. I don't know. Lemaisa, I you can't sit shiver for someone who converted to another religion. Give me a break.
The other thing I was going to say was that I thought partially with your Tibor doesn't mean they're not from. That means they're from, but they're not like, at least according to the Rambam.
No, but you have to look later on. He's referring to exactly 35 Simonim later, where I hear you're talking, but that's not what it sounds like. Before. Yeah. Anyway, Lemaisa, I'll just make two more haros. One is the big question, what about intermarrying? Right? Where does intermarrying fall into this? Is someone who's intermarried out of the Jewish people? Is someone who's intermarried just not such an observant Jew? I think once upon a time someone was intermarried. We, in the old days, they considered him not part of the Jewish people anymore. That was as bad as converting to another religion. Because that was ultimately like opting out of the entire Jewish people, not just being in a broigas with God right now, but like the description that Zev mentioned. I heard from Lichtenstein that nowadays, that in America certainly, you know, among people, even people who are like conservative and have some tradition, etc., it's so makubal that you could be a good Jew and intermarry, and all the rabbis are intermarried and not Orthodox rabbis. And everyone celebrates intermarriage, and everyone thinks it's a nice thing to intermarriage, and it doesn't at all. No one thinks it's a steward of Judaism to intermarry anymore, right? Even open Orthodox, you have rabbis who think that you can be a good Jew and be intermarried by now. So how can you blame the Reformed people? So therefore, Rav Lichtenstein felt strongly that once upon a time, intermarrying was like being baptized in a church, and meant you have abandoned all links to the history of the Jewish people. But he thinks nowadays intermarriage is like Chilul Shabbos. It's a terrible affair. We're very sad that people do it. But they're still Jews. They just think it's okay because they were brought up to think that good Jews intermarry. And as crazy as that seems to us, if you go out there in the non-Orthodox world, that's really like a double pasha to them. That of course good Jews intermarry. That's part of being a good Jew, is to welcome the stranger.
etc. And therefore, nowadays, people are intermarry. At least Rav Lichtenstein Psak was that we should just treat them like people who aren't from and not like people who are no longer part of the Jewish people. The last thing I want to mention is the famous mice of Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom quoted the Taz, he sat for his son who shmadded and died. Rabbeinu Gershom had a son who converted to Christianity. Lots of gedolim over the generations this happened to. There were difficult times over the generations. And when he died, he sat 14 days of avelus for him. Why? Because not only did he die, but he wasn't zochen tshuva and lost his lost his olam haba. Kal v'chomer l'shechina yodalad yom, meaning if for the physical death is 7 days, then for the spiritual death is 14. And all the posts can say that that is not the mainstream halacha. That was just an extra tsar that he personally had. But that is not the mainstream halacha. However, there are two different girsos, two different mesoras. I'm not going to go through all the Rishonim. There are two different mesoras as to exactly what happened with Rabbeinu Gershom. Some have the mesora, not like the version of the Taz, that his son shmadded and died. That his son shmadded. He didn't say his son shmadded today and died 6 years from now. He didn't sit shiva 6 years from now. He sat shiva right away when his son shmadded. He didn't care when his son died because it didn't make a difference at that point. So there are two different gersos, what Rabbeinu Gershom did. The Taz says he sat shiva when his son who shmadded died for 14 days. And then that's not the minhag. Others say, no, he sat shiva when his son shmadded for 14 days. And from that came the minhag, not the Taz's version, the other version, came the minhag that if someone's relative converts out, they sit shiva for them. Or in the old days, if someone intermarried, I'm sure you all heard these stories, someone intermarried and their family sat shiva for them. Where did they come from? From the other girsa, the other version of the other mesorah of Rabbeinu Gershom, not the one in the Taz, that he sat shiva as soon as the son shmadded. Why? Because as soon as the son shmadded, he was as worse than dead because he had left the Jewish people. Maybe he'll do shiva. Okay, so there's Tchias HaMesim, but just as Tchias HaMesim doesn't mean that the fellow's not dead now. Of course he would have liked him to son do tshuva, but that's the machlokas. Was he only sad when his son finally died because he thought he would do tshuva until then? Taz's version. Or the other version of Beis Lechem Yehuda has this version, quotes this version. No, as soon as his son shmadded, he was dead and he sat shiva. In the old days, people sat shiva when the relatives intermarried. I heard from Lutzen that nowadays, if intermarriage is, you know, no one sees it as leaving the Jewish people. Not to mention the fact that nowadays, who stays married for, you know, more than a year or two anyway, so who knows? You know, in the old days, they picked a religion, they picked it for a long term. Nowadays, people pick religions, they probably only pick it for a fortnight. When people get married, they get married for a couple of years and then move on. So anyway, nowadays, I would not say someone such as shiva when their relative intermarries.
And what about going off the derech?
What about going off the derech? So again, in some communities, definitely, they would say someone who goes off the derech is one should shiva for them when they go off the derech, and not when they die. One should sit and drink l'chaim when they die, etc. Our assumption is that even if someone goes off the derech, even if they're not mamash atinuk shenishva, here's the Rav Kook, which is not the one you meant. Rav Kook says that nowadays, with the strength of the power of the tentacles of the secular world, that even someone who's more affirming goes off the derech is not a rasha like in the old days and is a victim of circumstance, which is really true. Like if you think about the modern world, I'm not here to give a Musar Shmuz on the modern world. But it's very different than the old days, right? In the old days, yeah, there was like another philosophy out there. If you wanted to discover it, you could find goyim who did all kinds of things. Nowadays, everyone in their pocket, they have every single kfira and every single taiva in the entire world. And not only that, there are people who sit on Madison Avenue who make six-figure salaries. Their whole job is how to use the media to convince people to do things that are not in their best interest spiritually, but will make money for the company they work for. And therefore, nowadays, it's really not fair, says Rav Kook. He wasn't talking about nowadays. Kol Shekin, nowadays, he says, we live in a world where wherever you go, they're bombarding you with things devised by all kinds of psychologists to make you do things that you didn't really want to do on your own and to influence you, and everyone's coming to try and get people off the derech. And therefore, nowadays, if someone goes off the derech, obviously, it's not okay. I'm not saying that we approve, but we try to judge favorably that maybe they're the victim of living in a very, very challenging world and they weren't up to the challenge. Obviously, they should have been. Okay, but there's a difference between someone who mamish is just that evil person who loves to do evil things
versus someone who gives in to a very strong temptation. That's Rav Kook's Vart. So nowadays I would say that if someone did the things that unfortunately are mekubel among non-frum Jews nowadays, or even mekubel among a lot of Jews who grew up in frum houses, then I would treat them like a regular Jew and just try to be mekarev of them, as the Chazon Ish says, ba'avosos ha'ava. Okay, weiter. Sif vav. Al adam kosher, she'enu kosher shom aveira. He was talking about a Jew who's not a Russia. But they're not a tzaddik either. They do aveira sometimes. They just, their whole lifestyle is not aveira, so they're not a kofer. Okay, here we're talking about a tzaddik. Adam kosher. Kosher is what we call a tzaddik. She'enu kosher shom aveira. You don't suspect him of doing any aveiras. Obviously, you don't know. But it doesn't look like he does any aveiras, so you assume he doesn't do aveiras. V'lo shebitol mitzvah. It doesn't look like he's mevatel any mitzvos. V'lo sonei shemoneh. There's no bad rumors about him. And the Shach adds from the Bach. No, he also has to be someone who runs after mitzvahs and gvilos chasadim. Like mamash tzaddik. He seems to do all the mitzvahs. You never heard anything bad. He never does aveiros. He's always trying to do extra mitzvahs and to be helpful and do gmilas chasadim. He's a real tzaddik. We all know tzaddikim. On a tzaddik, afishen a gadol b'torah, even though he's not a gadol b'torah, he's not educated. He's just a tzaddik. Even if someone wasn't there when he died, they have to decree on him, because the Gemara says that terrible things happen to you if you don't mourn for an Adam Kosher who died. I'm not going to get into the Rishonim here. This is only true if it's between death and the burial. After burial, there's no such chiyuv. But as opposed to a non-Russia, who there's only a chiyuv the moment of death if you're there, for a tzaddik, the chiyuv is any time between death and the funeral. There's a big machlokas rishonim. There's a big machlokas rishonim, which the Shach mentions here, whether that's only if you're at the funeral or even if you just hear the news, which we're not going to paskin now. V'talmidicham turim mikriyazo, and talmidei chachamim are potter from this because the talmid chacham doesn't have to hear kriya for someone who's on a lower madrega of Torah than he does. Adds the Ramah, though, and maybe we'll try to summarize here a little. That's also, by the way, a big machlokas. The Shach points out there's also machlokas we've shown him. So one machlokas we've shown him. What if you hear between Misa and Kfura, but you're not physically present? Another machlokas we've shown him. What about Talmidei Chachamim? The Pesachei Tshuva has a few other chakiras, which we are not going to... which we're not going to get into. The Gilui Marsha is a whole discussion. Do you say Baruch Dayan Emes B'Shem Malchus if a tzaddik dies? Brings many posts on that too. Our minhag nowadays is not to. We say without Shem Malchus. Lemaisa, says the Ramah, there's a Das Yachid of the Ran and the Rav Yah. Right? The Ran quotes a Yesh Omer like this, and the Rav Yah says, some people say, no, this is all a misinterpretation of the Gemara. Most you should interpret the Gemara, you have to hear Kriya. Why? Because that's the context of the Gemara. The Gemara says, why is it during Kriya? Ah, because in Adam Kasha, you have to be Bochum as Abel. But the Ran quotes a day in the Rav Yah say, no, it just means someone might hear Kriya because they have to be Bochum as Abel. But really, there's no Kiyiv to hear Kriya just to be sad and mourn for them. And Chinor Lahakel, the minug is that we're mekel and we don't tear for an Adam Kosher. Instead, we're just sad and mourn for them. Bochum as Abel. Okay, for some reason, the minug seems to be to minimize all these kriyos. But at least this, unlike Sif Hay and Sif Vav, we have Rishonim, who we can base a minug Lahakel on. Sif Zayin, Al Chacham, Yal Tamil Chacham, Shola also.
Sfardim are also like, meaning the basis is very strong.
I think Sfardim are also mekel nowadays. I never saw any Sfardi tear kriya when it's Sadik died. And remember, I mean, I'm talking about Rosh Hashiva or something. We're talking about like an old lady who's a big tzaddik.
That's just right. Like the basic is like everybody knows you're not.
Yes, I know. He's mevaza the shitas yachid, right. But lemaisa the minig is lachol nowadays. Al chacham the al talmud chacham she shol and oso dvar lachem kol makom on a chacham. Chacham means a Rosh Hashiva, or talmud chacham means someone who's very learned but is not a Rosh Hashiva. And then how learned does he have to be? If he's not a Rosh Hashiva, how do you know if he's a big Talmud Chacham or just a mediocre Talmud Chacham? Actually, you ask him a halacha in anywhere in halacha and he knows the answer. Korin Allah afilu la'achar kvura b'yom shmua. Then it's more chamer. On a tzaddik, we see a Talmud Chacham is greater than a tzaddik. In an Adam Kasher, your Korin Allah, any time between Misa and Kvura. On a chachim yichori love even after kvura v'yom shmua on the day that someone heard imu tok lamed yom. There's also machlok because we'll eat paskin only if it's within 30 days because there's a concept called shmua rechoka after 30 days. It's old news in the nochi of kriya. So after 30 days for relatives and for a chacham, it's old news in the nochi of kriya. V'yichori love v'shas hespedo, and you tear at the time of hesped. And the Ramah adds, "Lokor biyom Shmua kvar avers minus beidu lokor shuv enu korea." If the person didn't hear when he heard the chacham died and didn't hear at the hesped, then he can't hear anymore. It has to be at a shaschimum, and the two shaschimums are either the time of death or the time of or the time of hesped. V'korin alav achim nelos libam. And what's the shear? The shear is the longer shear, like parents, of Achi Gala S Libam, all the way to reveal the heart. Here, the Shach points out that there's another opinion that's going to be mentioned later, that it's only a tefach. We'll see all this not so relevant. The meaning is that Talmidei Chachamim tear for each other a tefach, even though they're equal and neither one of them teaches the other, the Talmidei Chachamim, meaning no one's the Rebbe of the other, just Talmidei Chacham. Talmidei Chachamim tear for each other a tefach, meaning according to the Mechaber, that a regular person should tear a Shigalas Libo, but a Talmidei Chacham on another Talmidei Chacham doesn't have to Mechaber him as much and just tears a tefach, says the Ramah, Yesh Omrim Shein Korn al Chacham Elam Kenu Rabo, O Shiyodim Shmosov Shechidish Tainu Rabo, Kenog Lachacham Dinos Elu. Okay, this is based on how you read the story with Rav Safra in the Gemara. Says they say they didn't tear Rav Safra. They said, what do you mean? Any chacham we tear on, and we know his shmos. So the Machaber says, we know, meaning we know his Torah. We learned his. We didn't learn from him face to face, but we know his chidushei Torah. The Machaber says, you tear for any chacham, even if you don't know him, you didn't learn his Torah. And kolshkin, if you learned his Torah, but you tear for any chacham, and that's the psak of Machaber, tear for any chacham who dies. The Ramah says, no, it means you tear for any chacham if he's your Rebbe, or you at least learned his Torah. You know, there are certain people who we never learned from, but we read their svarim, and we learned their Torah, we heard their drushes, and we know their Torah. V'cheinu l'hagim li'os elu, we are makel nowadays, and I think the svarim also, to only tear on, and I'm not going to throw all the acronym here, to only tear on someone who we learned Torah from. The Shach asked the problem. The minhag nowadays is not like the Mechaber or the Ramah. Mechaber says, tear for any chacham who dies, if you're here within 30 days. And the Ramah says, no, only tear if you learn some of their Torah. He says, what do you mean? Nowadays, there are lots of rabbis, we read their Sfarim, we hear their Divrei Torah, and we don't tear on any of them. How come we don't keep Siv Zayin nowadays? So the Shach says that it must be that whether he's a chacham or a talmud chacham, it's only if he knows Kol HaTorah Kula and can answer a question from any place, even Maseches Kalah. Says nowadays, even the big rabbis don't know Kol HaTorah Kula like in the old days. We don't have Talmid Chacham like in the old days. There was Yeridus HaDoros, and that's why we don't tear on them, because there's a Tanai, not only for the Talmid Chacham. The Chacham also has a Tanai that it's only if Sholom Sodvar Lech Chacham Lech Omer, even Maseches Kala, and nowadays, even Rosh Yeshiva don't know Maseches Kala well enough. You can't ask them anything in the whole Torah, and they can answer you offhand. Okay, some of the modern day poskim say, what about people like Rav Avadya Yosef and Rav Eliashiv, you know, who can? So it's sort of Ian, why? We're not knowing where Rav Eliashiv died, not everyone tore Kriya. When Rav Avadya died, not everyone tore Kriya. Sort of Ian on that.
The Shach felt that he wouldn't do it on his Rebbeim. I mean, not his personal Rebbeim. I'm just saying, like,
you're saying if the Shach was talking to the Yom his generation, then it has to. Right, now. Okay. Chesky makes a good point. Even though some of our Gedolim seem very impressive to us, and they should, still, if the Shach didn't think in his days there were such big Talmid Chachamim, then maybe in our days there also aren't such. After all, we're not greater than the Talmid Chachamim in the days of the Shach. So therefore, we have a good excuse why we don't keep Sif Zayin. I apologize that basically every Sif is like, here's the Sif, and here's why we don't keep it. But not much I can do about that. The hour is late. We'll have to stop here and speed as much as we can next time, even though I'm 3 seifim behind where I thought I would get to. But we'll have to continue Amir Tashem on Tuesday. The hope is, yes. The goal is.
to finish the seminar Tuesday. Let me just remind you that after Tuesday, the next year will be Tuesday after Pesach. And then I have to go to America for the Shabbos after Pesach. So the second shiur of the next Zman will be Thursday after Pesach. That's on the schedule I sent out. So after Zman, we'll have shiur Tuesday, Thursday, Tuesday, instead of Tuesday, Sunday, Tuesday, because I'll miss out only with Sunday because of a trip to America. I have to speak about important things, apparently, in a few places in America. So I apologize. So again, this Tuesday, then the Tuesday after Pesach, then Thursday, then Tuesday and normal.